Does Hollywood bully Christians? Is it time to embrace our digital addiction? Let's find out. What's up, guys? My name is Ben Pierce. Welcome to another edition of Provoke and Inspire Instant Reaction, where I gather together some of the world's most pressing issues, and I ask the question, what would Jesus think? And what would Jesus do? If you enjoy this content, consider subscribing to this channel, comment below, liking it, sharing it with someone, do something. For more Provoke and Inspire content, including articles, full-form conversations, and interviews, click the link in description. All right, let's do this. Hollywood actor Rainn Wilson, The Office superstar, called out last Sunday's episode of the record-breaking HBO series The Last of Us. The episode shows a group of cannibals led by what appears to be a Christian pastor. The group quotes Bible verses to defend their actions, with the preacher David also shown trying to assault lead character Ellie. Now, in response to the episode, Rainn tweeted this. I do think there is an anti-Christian bias in Hollywood. As soon as the David character in The Last of Us started reading from the Bible, I knew that he was going to be a horrific villain. Now, he's not the first person to criticize the show for their ideological perspective. Ben Shapiro lambasted the show for featuring a queer storyline in their third episode. Shapiro called the series
Brokeback Zombie Farm or whatever
in reference to the film Brokeback Mountain. Maybe not the most sensitive approach, but that's not exactly what he's known for. So what do we make of this? Well, the short answer is yeah, Hollywood does bully Christians, or certainly they depict us in a very stereotyped, ludicrous, and exaggerated way. Like Rainn said, it would be very rare for a TV show or the media or movies to depict Christians as loving, kind, gracious, good people. Hollywood sees Christianity, especially evangelical Christianity, as ideological enemies. And so they are all but incentivized to depict us in a way that would perpetuate that image. When an influencer, when a celebrity, when an actor or author comes out and defends Christianity, our tendency can be to want to celebrate, to be like, yes, that's great. Look, I totally understand the sentiment. When you feel like you're already on the outside of culture, when you feel maybe ostracized to some degree, when someone in a position of influence stands with you, supports you, it's natural to want to celebrate. You want to cheer for that. Like, look, mom, I am cool. And when someone does give their life to Jesus or does defend the truth of the Bible, that's worthy of celebration. But I think we can all agree that the conversation is a little bit more complicated than that. A recent example that comes to mind is actor Mark Wahlberg. You know, he's this icon, this superstar, and he's become increasingly outspoken about his faith. Check out this recent interview he did because I think it's very encouraging.
Your faith means so much to you. Mm. Have you always talked about it? Or did you feel some point like, okay, I have a platform here and I just want to share this part of my journey?
I have. You know, it's a balance. I don't want to jam it down anybody's throat,
yeah.
But I do not deny my faith. That's an even bigger sin. You know, it's not popular in my industry, but, you know, I cannot deny my faith. Mm-hmm. It's important for me to share that with people, but I have friends from all walks of life and all different types of faiths and religions. So, you know, it's important to respect and honor them as well.
Yeah. What does it mean to you, your faith?
Oh, it's everything. It really has. It's afforded me so many things. Obviously, you know, God didn't come to save the saints. He came to save the sinners. We've all had things and issues in our lives, and we want to be better versions of ourselves. And through focusing my faith, it's allowed me to do that.
So again, we should celebrate when someone of influence is public about their faith or stands up for what's true. But I think here's the challenge. When you look at a lot of these influential Christians or celebrity Christians, whether it's in Hollywood or in the sports world or in media, the lives of these celebrities rarely seem to match the words. What I'm not saying is that if you're a Christian, you're perfect and you have it all figured out. The outside of the dish is clean. My life is certainly not that way at all. But there seems to be this weird savior but not Lord kind of faith, where Jesus is about grace, he's about kindness, he's about acceptance, he's even about salvation, but there doesn't seem to be a submission to the lordship of Christ over my life, in the choices I make, the movies I star in, the words that I use in my lyrics, the things that I post on social media. I'm not talking about moral perfection, but I believe there's a genuine contrition, there's a genuine submission and desire for there to be a congruence between what I say and how I live. Specifically in the case of Rainn, he doesn't even call himself a follower of Jesus. He says in a tweet, "Also, I'm not even a Christian, as I just said." Of course, it's true that the evangelical political coalition is doing a great deal of damage to our country. banning books, banning freedoms, denying inconvenient science, and taking a grotesque anti-LGBTQ plus platform. We have to understand the full package of what they represent so we know exactly how we should respond. All right, so in all of this, what's my point? I want to just end with a few closing remarks, a few closing thoughts for us to consider before I move on. I think we need to recognize our innate desire for our faith to want to be popularized, for it to be legitimized. You know, we want to be like the person who finally feels cool at the party, right? We finally get invited. In a way, we want to have our cake and eat it too, have our faith and our popularity at the same time. But here's the harsh fact. Jesus will never be cool. He will never be popular. He will never be mainstream. He will never fit into the cultural narratives and ideologies of our day. If you can make Jesus cool, he's no longer Jesus. And that is something we have to be very, very cautious of. Jesus was loving, he was accepting, he was caring, but he was countercultural. He was revolutionary. He challenged the system. Jesus didn't come to this earth to be popular. He came to earth to save people and often delivered a message that people didn't even want to hear. He was rejected. He was betrayed. He was ultimately killed, not because he fit in and not because he was cool, but because he was willing to tell the truth no matter the cost. Look, when we don't show caution when endorsing public declarations of faith by influential people, we may be inadvertently promoting a false gospel. A version of Jesus that is less about sin and salvation and more about kindness and acceptance, which is really like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet hole. So cheer, but cheer cautiously, and make sure we aren't tolerating a version of the gospel that is cheap and palatable just so we can get a seat at the party, because the party is stupid anyway. Is it time to embrace our digital addiction? Look, we are all addicted to screens, and post-COVID, things have only gotten worse. We go to our phones for fun, for entertainment, for sports, for work, for love. Look, there are a billion reasons to be on your phone, but look, for those reasons and more, we are all addicted. And I'm going to bore you with the stats. There are stats, more stats, and more stats. I know it, you know it, we are all addicted. And so, in response to that, there has been this digital detox move. It's been this buzzword out in the tech world and in the business world. How can I detox myself digitally? It's a trend to ditch your devices to improve your mental health. The CEO of Salesforce, Marc Benioff, is one of the leaders in this movement. He took a 10 tech-free day at a French Polynesian resort. Wow, that must be tough to be old Marc Benioff. But others are pushing back on those that are pushing back, claiming that this is not realistic, not in the day and age that we live in. You can't possibly remove all digital devices from your life, not even for a few days. As BBC tech writer argues, there aren't specifically proven benefits from periods of tech abstinence. Really? I mean, that's like saying there are no scientific studies for the detrimental effect of being punched in the face. You don't need to study that. We know that it's true. Be that as it may, some people are arguing there's just no turning back, right? Devices have just become too integrated into our lives. There's nothing we can do. Seattle-based consultant Emily Shurkin, who specializes in screen time management, let that sink in for a second. As she writes, it's so embedded in our lives, we are setting ourselves up for failure if we are saying we're going to go phone-free for a week. Instead, the new trend is to advocate for what's called digital mindfulness, which is kind of like saying,
I used to do drugs, I still do, but I used to too.
This whole conversation reminds me of an article I was reading recently about porn, which basically says, look, it's just part of our lives, right? We just need to move on, accept that it's here to stay, that it's even a good thing, and really just start having conversations about it. How can we integrate it into our lives? How can we distinguish between good and bad porn? How can it be beneficial? Where are the lines? We have so normalized pornography in our culture that it's not even good or bad anymore. It's just ubiquitous. It's like concrete or the rain or ducks, right? It's just part of life, and we got to figure out how to best utilize it. Is that really the kind of world we're living in? Not only with porn, but with digital devices? Do we now just have to be mindful? Do we now just have to accept that there is no going back? I don't know. Look, as Jesus followers, I think we have to be aware of the patterns of culture, how they're trying to shape us, and not to blindly follow their lead. Listen to the words of Romans 12:2 as interpreted by The Message, because I think it powerfully speaks to cultural's influence and our need to resist. So here's what I want you to do. God helping you, take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him. Don't become so well-adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants you to do and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you, develops well-formed maturity in you. Guys, let's not unthinkingly follow the patterns of the world. Let's not become so well-adjusted to our culture that we simply do what they recommend without even asking. And I think that applies in the area of our digital addictions. Let's not look to the world for our guide, whether we should detox or be mindful or whatever else. Let's ask God, how would he have us confront the problems and obstacles of our age? Look, I don't have all the answers. I struggle with this too. This is an ongoing process for me. You know, often in this area, I feel like we're lab rats in our own maze. We don't even know how destructive these devices are in our lives and obviously also in the lives of our children. And so this is something we have to take very seriously. So without any sense that I am the expert here, let me just give four ideas and then move on. First thing is ask God first, right? Don't look to the world for advice. Look to his word and say, God, how would you have me deal with this pattern? No, the Bible doesn't talk about phones and apps and social media, but it absolutely has relevant wisdom for you in this area. Second is have a plan. Look, in this area, if you don't have a plan, it will plan you, right? It will control you if you don't control it. We should use devices, but not be used by them. And if we're unintentional, we will be. Third is we need to have accountability. Look, I think we understand this, especially men in the area of sexual purity, but in this area too. I think we need to have honest conversations in community about digital devices and our addiction to them and how we can help each other manage it better. And then finally, I'd say we need to be radical, not take small steps, not little measures. We might need to consider drastic measures in our lives and for those of us who are parents and the lives of our kids to offset and mitigate against the serious damage that this kind of addiction is and will cause in the future. All right, well, that's it. Now on to the book recommendation of the week. I try to find a book that I think fits with this topic, and the one I have for you today is not new, but it is absolutely relevant, and it is this, The Shallows by Nicholas Carr. We'll put the link in the description. The subtitle is What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. This book is incredible. I just have a few quotes I want to read from it for you. One of the quotes is, calm, focused, undistracted, the linear mind is being pushed aside by a new kind of mind that wants and needs to take in and dole out information. In short, disjointed, often overlapping bursts, the faster, the better. Another quote that I found really compelling is this. It's on page 7. It says, whether I'm online or not, my mind now expects to take in information the way the internet distributes it, in swiftly moving streams of particles. Once I was a scuba diver in a sea of words, now I zip along like a guy on a jet ski. And so in this book, Nicholas Carr talks about the rewiring effect, well, not just of the internet, but of all things, how our brains are plastic, how they are moldable and malleable, and how they are affected by the things we use. And perhaps nothing is shaping our minds more today than the internet. So I'd highly recommend this book. It's very sobering. It very much makes you think about what you do online and in life in general. Nicholas Carr, The Shallows. We'll put the link in the description. That's my book of the week. Guys, thank you so much for checking out Provoke and Inspire Instant Reaction. I need your feedback. I want your feedback. I want to hear your opinions on celebrity Christians, about the way Hollywood depicts our faith, about digital addictions and mindfulness, the whole thing. Put the comments below. Let's have this be a conversation. Check out all the rest of our Provoke and Inspire content by also clicking the link in description. Otherwise, I'll talk to you next time. Peace.